Let's go, let's go, let's go. Tempo in and out of the huddle. I want to go odd. 5-51 mirror.
This is Patriots Playbook.
Go stack guts combat. Odd. 51 mirror.
Patriots Playbook. Breaking down last Sunday's game.
They're looking for man coverage in the zone. They didn't have anybody to throw to. Just stay outside on the seven route.
Next Sunday's game.
Get ready for the grapes check, too, okay? Because we'll get the bunch on third and short. Even 51 grapes. Even 51 grapes.
And the rest of the 2007 NFL
season. Yeah, go ahead and hit it in there because the backers are going to fast lead over the top.
And some of the fun stuff in between. Now, here's John Rook on Patriots Playbook.
Come on, let's go, let's go.
Playbook for a Wednesday. We welcome you inside here on Patriots.com Radio Kids. I'm John Rook. And the Pats getting now set for a Monday night encounter with the Baltimore Ravens. I mentioned this yesterday, and I'm going to mention it again right now. Why does it seem like we're always playing at night? Be nice to get a good old-fashioned day game. You know, a 1 p.m. Eastern time kickoff. My whole life is getting turned upside down. Right, Gary? All the night games that are going on. Hey, coming up again in 10 minutes, Ron Jaworski, Jaws himself from ESPN and a part of ESPN's Monday Night Football crew. He's going to join us here on the program. He had joined us once earlier this year before Monday Night Football and has acquiesced again. And so we'll get into the Patriots and Ravens matchup and get some of his thoughts on at least the recent roster moves, which we'll touch on here in just a moment. Also, Jerry Sandusky, who is the play-by-play voice of the Baltimore Ravens. He is scheduled to join us in the 3 o'clock hour this afternoon, approximately 1 hour from now. So you probably want to stay tuned for that. If you want the latest on the Baltimore Ravens, that will be coming up in about an hour. Right after we were done yesterday, well, not right after we were done, but probably within about an hour or so, after we were through with yesterday's program, the Patriots made the dual announcement of activating Troy Brown and putting Roosevelt Colvin on the injured reserve list. A little bit of a surprise, I think, in Rosie Colvin's instance, because he did leave the field under his own power again on Sunday, based on what I can recollect, anyway. And what we talked about a little bit with Bilo yesterday. I guess... You have to expect this coming. You have to expect it. The Patriots have been so fortunate in the injury department thus far this year, more so than usual, because we all know in the last couple of years, the secondary in particular has been devastated by injuries. And this year, they've, for the most part, avoided the really big ones until now. And, you know, listening to the PFW guys talk about it a little while ago, I think they're sort of downplaying, you know, Colvin's loss overall to the defense, and I think it's easy to do that, to be honest with you, because of the depth that they have, and quite frankly, in the overall scheme of things, it may not mean as much as you think it will mean, although it certainly will leave the depth a little bit thinner in the linebacking core. Let me say this about Colvin. Has he had, statistically speaking, one of his best years? Maybe not. But I think we all saw, with at least our own two eyes, early in the season, where he had more explosiveness coming off the edge, and when he was lining up as an edge rusher, creating havoc in the backfield. We've seen him have more explosiveness now this season than at any point in time in his previous Patriot career, and probably certainly since prior to his hip injury that he had suffered in his first year here in New England. So the fact that he's going to be gone for the rest of the season, which obviously also includes the playoffs, is a blow. There's no two ways about it. But can the Patriots overcome it? Yeah, sure they can. We talked about this yesterday. A couple of emailers said, well, what do they do? And quite frankly, they'll move both Seau and Bruschi to the middle rather than, you know, alternate each other. They'll probably put them both in there. And they brought Chad Brown in as well. To provide some support on the end. Adalis Thomas is obviously still very much a factor there, and most likely, even though he's been playing largely in the middle this year, he'll probably move some to the outside. And who's to say a guy like Pierre Woods won't get a look? You know, he's been playing mostly special teams, but, you know, that's what he did. He had great edge rushing speed when he was at Michigan, and so Woods could also get an opportunity there. And then, you know, this is, of course, if the Patriots decide that 3-4 is the way they need to go most of the way. You know, we saw a lot of four down lineman sets this past week against the Eagles in an effort to contain and try to bottle up a guy like Brian Westbrook, which for the most part I thought they accomplished. against the Eagles on Monday, on Sunday night. So, you know, to that end, if they go 3-4, then you probably will see those two inside guys playing quite a bit together, Seau and Bruschi. But if they stay 4-3, I don't see their rotation hurting at all. In fact, right now, based on their personnel sets, to me, it makes more sense to look at the 4-3 because you're deeper on the defensive line. Look at it this way. You could put Seymour and Jarvis Green in there together. Slide Vince Wilfork over a little bit. I mean, it makes good sense. So don't be surprised if you see more four down defensive lineman sets from the Patriots based on the injury to Colvin. It wouldn't surprise me, but I really don't think it's going to change a whole lot what the Patriots have done defensively to this point in time. Does it hurt to have him gone now? Sure it does. It hurts you depth-wise. It hurts you skill position-wise. Here's a guy that, you know, could be considered still a difference maker for you on defense. But, you know, there just aren't any teams that haven't been hit by the injury bug. Patriots may have been one of the last few teams to really have been hit hard by the injury bug. If anything, the Patriots were hurt by injuries early in the season when they didn't have Seymour for a while. Of course, they didn't have Rodney Harrison for, you know, his suspension. But the Patriots were hurt with a couple of big absences, especially defensively, early in the year and then got guys back. And now they lose again with Colvin being out for the year. So just a little bit of a different perspective on the Rosie Colvin injury. Was he having an all-pro season? No, not really. I mean, you probably could save the all-pro accolades for a guy like Mike Vrabel, to be honest with you, the kind of year that he has had. And I think that, you know, he's had a solid year, but, you know, is it overcomable? Sure. Injuries are supposed to be overcomable if you are a team that is thought of like the Patriots are thought of. So that's just, you know, it's a mere blip on the radar screen is pretty much how I'm looking at it. I'm curious to know right off the bat how you look at Roosevelt Colvin's absence now and what you would do if you could scheme the Patriots defense from here on out. How would you set the personnel? Who would you like to see in these situations?
Dan Klecko.
Besides him. Webradio@patriots.com is the email address. Webradio@patriots.com. Do you want to see Seau and Bruschi in there together in the 3-4 set? Do you want to see more four down lineman sets? Do you want to see more Jarvis Green? You want to see more Pierre Woods, Eric Alexander? Chad Brown? Do you want to see him in? Who do you want to see? Who do you want to see? How do you want the Patriots, in your best guesstimation, how do you want the Patriots to overcome Roosevelt Colvin's absence now for the rest of the season? All right, so that's one thing you can certainly be talking about. The other thing that and that we will entertain today here on the program, the other thing that kind of dawned on me, I'm listening to some local sports radio here from the guys at EEI who do the, you know, the Patriots Monday programming, and I'm trying to think, you know, one of the things that I've kind of hammered on over the course of the year fairly consistently has to do with the lack of overt, real, tangible results, I think, in the running game. And I realize that I have not been this year a huge fan, if you will, of Lawrence Maroney. I think Sammy Morris was a pleasant surprise to all of us. It's unfortunate that he took an injury. There's another injury that certainly, you know, the Patriots, at least to this point in time, have seemed to have sort of overcome, although we all know it'd be great if we still had Morris in there. Right? Quite frankly, I think he's the tougher of the two backs. Nevertheless, things are not as bad as it seems. Case in point, I'm looking through the NFL statistical numbers today, and obviously it's enough numbers to make your head spin. But the one thing that really jumped out at me, and I don't know if anybody else has made this sort of observation or not, but the one thing that jumped out at me is the fact that the Patriots are actually pretty decent in rushing yards. They're seventh in the NFL in total rushing offense. And they're not far out of really the top three or four. So even though, you know, they don't have a back, you know, that's up there in individual yardage, they don't have anybody in the top 10, certainly, even the top 15 in rushing. I think Maroney's just out of that. But fact is that team rushing-wise, they rank seventh in the league, still averaging over 124 yards per game on the ground and 310 through the air, which by far and away is the number one total offense in the NFL. Take this a step further. Patriots are third in the NFL in rushing touchdowns. Third. in the entire NFL in rushing touchdowns. So, again, we hammer on the point that Lawrence Maroney, until a couple of weeks ago, had zero, and now he has, what, two, I believe, on the season rushing touchdowns. But the Patriots are still third in the league in rushing touchdowns, or tied for third. I believe they have 12 rushing touchdowns this season. So that's another thing that sort of jumped out at me. And I guess the third, not necessarily final thing, but the other thing that jumps out at me, including the Patriots' rushing offense, is that in terms of first downs gained, in fact, that when you take a look at the team gaining first downs, hold on now here. Hold on just for a second, all right? Because this one's going to shock you. Patriots have 289 total first downs. Okay, which is still far and away number one in the league. They've gained 96 of those first downs via rush, which is number one in the NFL. 96. Number one in the NFL in rushing first downs. So, you know, again, things are never as bad as it seems. Maybe this is, you know, maybe this is where you give, you know, a tremendous amount of credit to... Oh, I don't know, the offensive line, to the offensive coaches, to the individual players that, you know, each of us at some point in time or another has, you know, banged on a little bit this season. Fact is that those are all numbers that are, you know, actually not only respectable, they're downright impressive. Now, what I think would be an interesting sort of comparison would be to take a look at what the rushing numbers are this year overall in the NFL and compare them to what rushing numbers were in the last year or two or even three. Because I'm of the impression that overall passing yardage continues to rise throughout the NFL while rushing yardage continues to drop for the most part. Now, it may be negligible, but I still get the impression that there's just more total yardage gained overall via the air than on the ground. And if somebody has done that research, I would love to hear from you today. Webradio@patriots.com. But that's just my overall impression. I've spent most of the morning going through a lot of these numbers here, and those are the numbers that really jump out at me about this team. So things are never as bad or as dismal as they seem. And, of course, it's kind of tough to put the word dismal and associate it with anything that the Patriots are doing nowadays, and I think we all realize that. But, you know, we always nitpick, right? Tuesdays are nitpick Tuesdays for us, and even though I know this is Wednesday, but, you know, we always have a tendency to try to nitpick on things that could be improved, could be a little bit better, things that, you know, haven't gone as well, that could stand some improvement, you know, just nitpick. For sake of nitpicking, for the sake of argument, mostly on Tuesdays throughout the season, and frankly, even though I'm a day late with that this week, that's what I'm thinking. I'm thinking, you know, I wonder what the rushing numbers are looking like. So I go through some of the numbers, and bingo, it's not near as bad as it looks. All right, we're pleased to be joined once again by a member of the ESPN Monday Night Football crew, of course, a part of the broadcast team that the Patriots take on the Baltimore Ravens this next Monday night in Baltimore, Ron Jaworski. Jaws, it's great to talk to you again. Thanks for spending a couple of minutes with us.
Always a pleasure. I'm sitting in my office at NFL Films. I just got done breaking down the Eagles-Patriots game, so the information is fresh.
Okay, here you go then. This is what we've been talking about for the last couple of days. Do indeed the Eagles and or other teams now in the NFL have a quote-unquote blueprint to beat the Patriots.
And I chuckle because I've heard that word all week, it seems. It started right after the Patriots had a close victory over the Eagles on Sunday night. Now, if you look offensively at what the Patriots did, it's quite amazing, actually. They only had 8 possessions in the game. The kneel down at the end of 9th possession really doesn't count. Mm-hmm. They ran 73 plays in those 8 possessions. In other words, every time they got the ball, they at least ran 9 plays. On third down, they were 10 of 16 for 63% conversion. You know, when you look at Tom Brady, 34 of 54, 380 yards and a touchdown. If you call that a blueprint for stopping a team, you must be a blind person. I mean, this offense went up and down the field. Wes Welker was phenomenal. Brady dropped back 57 times on called passes. He was hit 4 times. Yeah, there were 3 sacks, but he was only hit 4 times. You know, clearly, if there is a blueprint, it is this. Keep the ball away from Tom Brady, which for the most part, the Eagles did do a good job of.
Mm-hmm. I would agree with that, number one. Number two, you had A.J. Feely, who, you know, had maybe the best game of his career, and yet he was picked off three times. One of them returned for a touchdown, but he only really threw two what I thought were really bad passes all night, and unfortunately for him, it cost him.
Well, you know, after looking at tape from the Patriots' perspective defensively, I thought there were some holes in the defense. I thought when the Eagles attacked the middle of the field, they were successful. They did not get enough quick pressure on A.J. Feely. He is a much more reader of the defense style of player than Donovan McNabb is, per se, because everyone's familiar with Donovan as extend the play style. But A.J. Feely brought the ability to read coverage quickly and get the ball out of his hand. And he did do a very good job of that. And despite what, you know, maybe some of the knocks against the Eagles' wide receivers, you know, they can put four pretty good wide receivers on the field. And then if you integrate that with Brian Westbrook, who is maybe the most explosive running back as a receiver in the National Football League, they can create some problems for a defense. And if you look at the Patriots' defense, and I look at, for vulnerable areas, I believe it is the linebackers. Mm-hmm. If you can get a running back like a Brian Westbrook, who can beat most linebackers anyway, but if you get him matched against a linebacker or a slot inside receiver matched against a linebacker, you have a chance for success against his Patriots defense. It is not a high percentage blitzing defense where they get quick pressure. They're more of a mush rush. In other words, they like to compress the pocket, so the quarterback will get time to get rid of the football.
And that's exactly what happened on Sunday. And based now on what happened yesterday with Roosevelt Colvin going on the IR, how much more of an opportunity do you think this gives other teams?
I don't think it's a huge difference. I think where the difference will come is in the rotation. Adalys Thomas can move outside where he played very effectively a year ago in Baltimore. That means Junior Seau will have to play more snaps on the inside because basically both those guys have been sharing the snaps. So I do not think it is that big of a loss. Although, you know, Colvin is an outstanding football player, but I think so is Adalys Thomas. Now the number of snaps will be spread out.
Obviously, and the rotation will have to change. And one of the things that we talked about was that they went a lot with the four down lineman set as well several times in an effort to play that contained mush rush defense that you talked about. Maybe that's something they think about playing a little bit more often against other sides.
Yeah, it all depends on the game plan because, you know as well as I do and that the Patriots change their game plan every single week. And it's not like this is what we do, we're going to go out and do it. You know, they like to change up defensively. You know, Bill Belichick historically has done a terrific job of taking away what you like to do. So he'll zero in and, you know, on the Ravens this week and say, hey, you know, here's what they want to do. They want to work Derek Mason in the slot or they want to run the football, you know, between the tackles. He will take that away, and he will force a team to do what they do second best or third best, and that's really been the strength of his defense. So, you know, he will play a three-down lineman. He will play a four-down lineman. He will mix it up with nickel, dime, base, you know, do anything to confuse an offense and take away what they like to do.
Ron Jaworski will be a part of the ESPN Monday Night Football crews. The Patriots play at M&T Bank Stadium on Monday night against the Ravens. How disappointing are the Ravens to you as a team going in at 4-7 into this one?
Yeah, very disappointing because I thought when the schedule came out early in the season, man, we put a big circle on this one. We thought this would be one of those snot-knocker games, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, great defense of the Ravens, outstanding offense of the New England Patriots, and it just hasn't played out that way from the Baltimore perspective anyway. Right. The Patriots' offense has been outstanding. The Raven defense has not. And you know, they are a high-percentage blitz team, but they haven't blitzed very well this season. And when you lose a number of people they lost in the secondary, that's about what you expect. They just have struggled at the corner position due to injuries, and if the blitzes don't get home, their secondary has really struggled. And that's kind of been their problem on the defensive side of the ball.
Well, it certainly would play in, I think, into the Patriots' hands because while the Ravens, I still think, have a pretty physical run defense, as you suggested, pass defense is where they've really been banged up, and the pass defense, or pass offense, I should say, is where the Patriots have more than excelled.
Yeah, I would not be surprised if we saw the same, a blueprint per se. Mm-hmm. The buzzword seems to be this week, blueprint from the Patriots offense, what they did to the Philadelphia Eagles. They spread them out for the first 29 plays. There was 28 passes. All 28 of those passes in the first half came from the shotgun formation, which has become clearly the formation of choice for Tom Brady. He has been absolutely outstanding, you know, in the shotgun this season. In fact, he's 204 for 282, 22 touchdowns and four interceptions from the shotgun. So Tom clearly loves that formation. I think if you try to run the ball against a Ravens defense, you're banging your head against the wall. I think the best way to attack them is via the pass.
How well do you think that the Ravens can control the ball and keep the ball out of Tom Brady's hands with Willis McGahee and whomever else may be on that side of the ball?
It'll be very difficult. I just don't think that will be the right approach. I think if the Ravens come out and say, we want to control the football, we want to control the clock, I believe that will be a mistake. You know, the strength of the Patriots on the defensive side are their defensive down linemen. They're outstanding, and their inside linebackers, they stuff the run. Like I said, they have a liability. That is in pass coverage. The question is, do the Ravens have the skilled position players to take advantage of that? My knee-jerk decision and reaction to that would be, no, they don't.
In addition, though, to all of that, I would think that one of the strengths that the Ravens may have here would be to utilize Todd Heap up the middle against this Patriots defense. Agree or disagree?
That is their matchmaker, John. I think Todd Heap is one of those guys that could dictate a favorable matchup. You know, I believe when this Ravens offense is at least on schedule and productive, their offense runs through Todd Heap. You know, he's a guy that you can match up against a safety or a linebacker, and he could be very effective. He also is a very good blocker when he's a line of scrimmage player. However, the injuries have slowed down Todd Heap this season as well.
Sure. Ron, what are your thoughts on Wes Welker? I mean, what do you think when you hear the term or hear the words Wes Welker put together?
How about the slot machine? He has taken away the nickname from Brandon Stokely. In fact, if you watch a State Farm NFL matchup show this Sunday morning at 8:30, I am doing a piece on Wes Welker and showing a terrific job and how he was the difference maker against the Philadelphia Eagles a week ago. Every matchup that he got last week, he won. It was a safety, it was a linebacker, it was a corner. Whoever the Eagles decided to put on him, Wes Welker was winning. Tom Brady and Wes Welker see the field through the same eyes. They have that great esprit de corps, or chemistry, as you like to say, that a quarterback and wide receiver love to have. And he's a very definitive runner. Tom knows where he's going to be. He knows when to give those hints, when he's going to come out of his break. I think if you look at this offense right now, when they need a play, I'm not talking about the big explosive, you know, throw it down the field pass to Randy Moss or a streak route by Dante Stallworth. When they need a play to sustain offense and move the chains, Tom Brady looks for Wes Welker.
We sure appreciate your spending a little time with us today. And by the way, the Patriots Football Weekly writer guys told me to tell you hello.
Oh, those are my good buddies over there. Tell everyone hello.
Most definitely. Thanks, Josh. Appreciate it. You got it. It's Ron Jaworski once again, who, of course, will be a part of the Monday Night Football crew, ESPN television, as the Pats take on the Baltimore Ravens Monday night in the 8:30 Eastern time kickoff at M&T Bank Stadium. I finally got the name of the stadium right. I couldn't even come up with that yesterday. How brutal is that? But good of him to share a little time with us, because the demands on his time are obviously great. As you heard him say right off the top, he's sitting in his office. He has a desk and an office at NFL Films, where they can set him up with anything and everything that he needs in an effort to study for the upcoming game, and that's exactly what he's in the process of doing. So there you go. You get the very latest, and you get the first impressions of the matchup coming up on Monday night from Jaws himself. If you have any thoughts, any reaction to that, any ideas of your own based on his comments, webradio@patriots.com. That's how you get a hold of us, webradio@patriots.com. I asked him about Wes Welker because I know that's one of the things I talked about on yesterday's show. And in addition, I had several emailers yesterday write in to say, hey, when can we start giving Wes Welker some credit here, give him his due? And it's not like, well, I don't think anybody's not giving him any due. What I think is that he operates in the shadows, the rather large shadows, of a guy like Randy Moss. And he doesn't do the same things that Moss does. I think most everybody who's watched this team realizes that. But he brings a skill set, and he brings abilities to this team, not only in offense, but certainly on special teams as well, that Moss and nobody else on this team can have. Nobody else on this team can bring. And that's why yesterday I made the comment that, you know, while Tom Brady certainly is deserving of MVP, in my, you know, he's more of a most outstanding player. But in terms of real value to your team, if you really want to look for a valuable player to the Patriots team in 2007, I really believe you can look no further than 83, Wes Welker. To me, he is the most valuable to this Patriots team based on what he does. You want to double-team Moss? Great. Try to stop Welker. You want to single team Moss. Maybe he misses one. Great. Try to stop Welker. Try to tackle Welker. Try to defend Welker. It's just hard to do. Not only as a receiver, but as a punt returner. It's just hard to do. And now you understand why it was so difficult for the Patriots to stop him when he was with the Dolphins. And he's just one of those guys that the Patriots have loved for a long time. And whenever they get the chance to pick up a guy like that, they're going to do it. And I heard the PFW guys mention in the previous hour a guy like Ed Reed, you know, that Belichick loves, and that when he's available, don't be surprised to see the Patriots go after him. And frankly, I think that'd be a great move. Here's a guy that, you know, epitomizes what, you know, the Patriots want. They want versatility. They want special talents. They want speed. They want toughness. They want all these things. Welker brings that to the table. He absolutely is the Patriot kind of player. And there are a lot of similarities, and I think we briefly touched on this yesterday, but a lot of similarities in what Wes Welker does and what Troy Brown did as well for this Patriots team a few years ago. Not to say that Troy's completely washed up. He's obviously activated now, going to be part of the roster here for the remainder of the season. But fact is that Welker has usurped Troy in that role, of being able to return kicks, of being able to, you know, get open underneath in short yardage and up the middle or over the middle situations on offense. Fantastic. And he's able to do it with just speed. Speed, quickness, toughness. Three separate things, but he's got them all. So I wanted to get his thoughts on that. And it doesn't surprise me at all for a guy like Jaws to think what he does about a guy like Welker. All right, webradio@patriots.com. That is, of course, the email address. I'm going to sneak in a timeout here, and we'll take a look at some of these emails. We'll share some of them with you. And coming up in approximately 30 minutes, Jerry Sandusky, who is the radio play-by-play voice of the Baltimore Ravens, he will also join us as we take a little bit closer look at the Ravens and the problems that they've had off the field, or actually more specifically on the field this year, and why 4-7 is certainly a bit of a disappointment for them when a lot of folks, and I think I have to include myself in this, thought that they would be a definitive contender within the AFC. And now it doesn't appear that the Ravens are even going to make the playoffs. I mean, they'd have to run the table, finish 9-7, and still get a lot of help. Because I think 10 wins is going to get in the playoffs in the AFC this year. 9-7, probably make it in the NFC, but not in the AFC. Also have the updated on the playoff picture as well, because, you know, the Patriots obviously clinched the division title last week, officially with the Buffalo's loss, so we'll update that for you. And a couple of other choice little tidbits in terms of some milestones that Patriots players are again approaching. Yep, more records on the horizon. We'll get to that in a moment, plus your emails, webradio@patriots.com, coming up.
He's been a three-time champion, two-time Super Bowl MVP, and kicked off 2007 on a record pace.
Three touchdown passes in the first half.
Now Tom Brady has signed official Patriots mini replica helmets, and you can get one free. Exclusively from the New England Patriots, this authentic mini helmet comes complete with chin strap, face mask, and Tom Brady's autograph. Perfect for every Patriots fan. To take advantage of this incredible one-of-a-kind offer, all you need to do is make qualifying transactions on your Bank of America Patriots Extra Points Visa card. Plus, with your card, you'll earn Patriots extra points redeemable for once-in-a-lifetime Patriots experiences, pregame field passes, memorabilia, merchandise, tickets, and much more. Don't wait. Apply at PatriotsExtraPoints.com or call 1-800-NFL-9929 to get your Bank of America Patriots extra points Visa card and a free official mini replica helmet autographed by Tom Brady. Patriots extra points, because fans want contact too. Autographed mini helmet limited to those making a qualifying purchase. See details at PatriotsExtraPoints.com.
All right, Jimmy, it's the big day, and we gotta go. Patriots kick off in an hour. Let's make sure we got everything.
All right, let's see. Face paint.
Check.
Helmets.
Check.
Foam fingers.
Check.
Jerseys.
Check.
Checks.
Check.
Check card.
Check.
That's everything.
Let's go, Pats!
Woo!
Let's go, Pats! Let's go, Pats! Let's go!
Check, check, check. That's right. If you really are a true Patriots fan, then you need to open a New England Patriots checking account from Bank of America today. You'll get checks, check cards, and even bank statements, all with the official New England Patriots logo. Bank of America is the official bank of the New England Patriots. So take advantage of this opportunity to make every day game day.
Let's go, Pats!
Woo! And sign up for a New England Patriots checking account today. Bank of America. Bank of Opportunity.
Bank of America N.A. Member FDIC. New England Patriots trademarks, including the Patriots logo, are the property of New England Patriots L.P. and are used pursuant to a licensing agreement with New England Patriots L.P. 2007 Bank of America Corporation. All rights reserved.
Well, it's that time of year again where Sunday means you're doing something football. Whether it's tailgating in the parking lot, throwing the pigskin around, or just hanging in and watching the game on the tube, it's all about football. And when you're not watching football or playing football, well, I think we both know you're thinking football. And all that can make you a little hungry. That's why there's the tasty snack wrap from McDonald's. Snack wraps now come in your choice of three flavors. New Chipotle barbecue, honey mustard, and ranch. And they're available with grilled or crispy chicken. Delicious and easy to eat. It's the perfect game time snack. So grab one today. And when you do, if you're looking at that chicken select and it kind of reminds you of a quarterback in the middle of the pocket, except now he's surrounded by cheddar jack cheese, ranch sauce, and lettuce, well, maybe you're thinking just a little too much about football. McDonald's. I'm loving it.
When you've got a lineman-size hunger and want the awesome, authentic taste of Gillette Stadium at your tailgate or right at home, tackle that appetite with Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Try Sack Attack sausages, First Down Franks, or Patriots brats in a wide variety of flavors at home, at the stadium, or at the game. And get your crowd cheering for Gridiron Grillers. They're great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are all you'll need for the perfect tailgate or home barbecue. Check out all of the Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Mild and hot Sack Attack sausages, Patriots cheese brats and beer brats, First Down Franks, and more. Patriots Gridiron Grillers go great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are available at Big Y, Demoulas Market Basket, Hannaford, Johnny's Foodmaster, Roach Brothers Sudbury Farm, Shaw's, and Stop and Shop, and distributed by Agar, Associated Grocers of Maine, and Associate Grocers of New England, and CNS Wholesale. Patriots Gridiron Grillers, when you just can't wait for Sunday.
Stay tuned, kids, because you know what? When we come up on this supposed bye week, alleged bye week that the Patriots would get if they're going to the playoff edition of Patriots Match Game 2007, I know that'll thrill Gary. Why not? We had fun, didn't we? By the way, did whoever win, did she get her gift yet? Okay, good.
She did, yeah.
Excellent. All right, wanted to make sure we got that. Got that out there because, you know, you never know. Couple of things that I wanted to bring you up to date on via Mike Reese from the Globe. He said at practice this afternoon that team was working on a lot of front seven situations because of Roosevelt Colvin's season-ending injury, as we've talked about, and so they're working on shuffling the linebacking core and working on player combinations, specifically how to line up when you are trying to stuff the run. So that's something the Patriots are working on today out at practice. Kevin Faulk was not available and not present for the media access portion of the practice. So the only three running backs that are out on the field today were Maroney, Evans, and Echol. Let's see, what else? Oh, the media demand of the players in the locker room following the practice today had to do with obviously centering on the linebackers. And so Dalis Thomas, Chad Brown, Eric Alexander, and Pierre Woods all answered questions concerning their playing time and, I guess, roles that they expect to have. And then Tom Brady was asked about the third straight night game for the team. And his quote was, "I'm tired of them. I look around at all these tired faces today, and I think everyone is just dragging a bit. You just don't get home until late, and it feels like you're trying to get caught up throughout the week. So this is the price of success, kids. This is the price of success. The fact is, the team's dragging a little bit. Third consecutive game to play at night. The only saving grace with this is that it is, of course, on a Monday, so there's actually an extra day of rest that's built in. But then again, this is going to make the big matchup the following week on Sunday afternoon, late, against the Pittsburgh Steelers, albeit at home, but it'll make it a shorter work week. And, you know, there's no way the Steelers are near as bad as the 3-0 Monday night debacle over the Miami Dolphins showed. I mean, there's no doubt in my mind the field conditions played a huge factor in that game, and you had to have seen it to really, you know, believe that. But I think the Steelers will be ready, and the Steelers will be capable for whatever that's worth. Troy Brown was not in the locker room during the media access period today. Let's see. So, you know, and that's basically the update in terms of some of the players and the personnel moves that might have been made today in light of Troy Brown being activated yesterday, Kareem Brown being let go, and Chad Brown being signed. In fact, got an email here from Henry, who sends this one from Montana, and he says, Troy Brown activated, Kareem Brown released, Chad Brown re-signed, all in one day, three transactions with guys named Brown. Is that another record by the 2007 Patriots? Actually, I didn't even think about that until you sent that note, Henry. But that's kind of funny. Yeah, it probably is a record for Brown transactions in one day. He says, also, can somebody take a lead pipe to Trent Dilfer's knees? He said, I about puked when I saw that guy take the field in San Francisco. All he does is win. He could single-handedly ruin half of my dream of the Pats winning it all and having the number one pick in the draft next year. Well, let me say this about Trent Dilfer. He's what we call a survivor. Now, Alex Smith just has not taken hold of the quarterbacking job in San Francisco like they had hoped he would. That's an awful lot of money and an awful high draft pick to waste on a guy who's not starting, who's playing behind a guy like Trent Dilfer now, quite frankly. But, you know, this is where doing your homework. This is where your player personnel people have to come in. They should have seen something in Alex Smith's game that said, you know what, I'm not 110% sold on the fact this guy being an NFL quarterback. There are a lot of intangibles involved. Size is one thing, ability to throw, speed, foot quickness, all of that stuff. But recognition is a huge factor. Ability to think on your feet, the ability to check off, the ability to check down, you know, to your, you know, second, third, and fourth, and even fifth choices as receivers when you really only have a split second. You know, to me, that's what Tom Brady does better than anybody else in the league, and that includes Peyton Manning. And his ability to check down to his, you know, different options other than his number one option. And that's the most valuable trait, I think, that a good NFL quarterback needs. You don't have quite as much of a demand to do that in the college game. But in the pros, it's all about being able to find your second, third, and fourth receivers. Dilfer is just a guy that seems to somehow put it all together and put a team on his shoulders and do whatever it takes. Now, he was eventually, you know, pushed out of just about every job he's had, but here's a guy that's hanging on to a career, and he's apparently taking over in San Francisco, and as, you know, our emailer Henry suggests, he may keep the Patriots from getting, you know, I don't know, at least a top five, you know, pick in the draft coming up next April if the 49ers continue to win. They've won three. I would think that they probably could not win any more if you still have hopes of perhaps selecting in that top five come April. But good email, Henry. Thanks for pointing all that stuff out. Let's get to some of the other emails that we have from earlier as well. And don't forget, by the way, webradio@patriots.com is the email address. And the initial email question of the day has to do with Roosevelt Colvin's absence and what the Patriots are working on in practice today. And they're working on lineups. They're working on sets. They're working on players in and out of the lineup. And what would you like to see the Patriots do to replace Roosevelt Colvin? What personnel sets would you like to see on the field? Who would you like to see play together? Would you like to see more four-man fronts? Are you okay with, you know, Sale and Bruschi playing side-by-side in the middle of a 3-4 set? If you could plan, tell me what you'd like to see from the Patriots defensively now in an effort to make up for Colvin's absence. Scott in Washington, D.C. says, if I am remembering this right, Colvin has been placed on IR twice during his years with the Patriots, and both times were from games against the Eagles. That is correct. The fractured hip back in September of 03, he says, and I believe that is also correct. So, yes, that is true. This is his second time he's been put on IR since he has become a Patriot, and both times were as a result of injuries sustained against Philadelphia Eagles. So I don't think the Eagles are really going to be getting any Christmas cards from the Colvin family. This message and email comes from a little bit earlier from Joe in Winnipeg, Manitoba. He says, very entertaining game on Sunday. Kudos to Andy Reid and the Eagles. Great game plan, good execution. First half reminded me of a couple of the Colts games this season, Denver and Jacksonville specifically. The opposition played very well, but still went into the locker room down at halftime. Great teams find a way to come out ahead against a good team playing great. Says, I enjoyed the podcast yesterday. It was nice to get some critical analysis after a game like that. I don't understand why some fans want you to say nothing but good things about a running back who has been underperforming and sits out the first half, and a coach whose game plan was not as good as the other coaches. Yes, we all know Belichick is a great coach. 99% of the time he outcoaches the opposition, but when he doesn't, I want to hear about it. There is more to being a fan than buying a jersey and a pair of pom-poms. That's well thought. Some questions, and I like your questions here, to be honest with you. Good questions, Joe. So let me see if I can tackle these one by one. He says, number one, more underperforming first-round pick, Maroney or Merriweather? Oh, boy. Well, let's see. I think you tend to think that a running back is going to be more of an impact player than a safety or a defensive back like Merriweather. Couple that with the fact that this is Maroney's second year, and it's Merriweather's first, so I'm still willing to give him a pass. Maroney's had a little more time in the system. I'd have to say if you made me choose between the two, I'd have to pick Maroney as more underperforming. More concerning, he says, no running game or poor secondary play. Well, that's a no-brainer for me, poor secondary play. The opening part of the program today, I gave you some numbers that the Patriots' running game is not near as bad, statistically speaking, as you or I or anybody else would think it to be. Quite the opposite. The Patriots are still seventh in the league in rushing yards per game. They are tied for third in the league in rushing touchdowns on the season. And they are number one in the league, number one now, in rushing first downs. So you'd have to say that those numbers belie the fact that we don't think the Patriots have a running game. So I'd have to say poor secondary play would be my choice there. And frankly, I don't think the secondary play was very good at all on Sunday night against the Eagles. I thought they played too soft. They weren't up in man coverage much at all. They consistently got torched in the middle. And again, I realize that may be part of the game plan of playing soft and not allowing somebody to get a big one on them. But frankly, it almost cost them the game. So I'll have to go with poor secondary play. More ridiculous comment, he says. The Eagles have discovered the blueprint, or mommy is calling. I'm going to say both. Especially the discover the blueprint phrase. More likely next week. Brady has more than four touchdown passes, or the Ravens score more than 10 points. Oh, goodness. More likely. I would say Ravens score more than 10 points. Brady could get four touchdown passes, but then, the Patriots could also run for one and then return a kick or a fumble or an interception for another. That seems to be their, the way that they go about doing things. That's how they, hang half a hundred on people. So I'll say the Ravens score more than 10, but not much more. About 13 would be about right, I think. Worst loss last week, Arizona versus the 49ers or Denver against the Bears? Ooh. Well, interesting choices. I'm going to have to say Denver against the Bears was the worst loss by my estimation because I think it's more damaging to Denver's potential playoff hopes. Arizona, even though that loss to the 49ers really hurts, not only A, because we own, the 49ers pick in April's draft, but Arizona shouldn't still hurt quite as much because they're 5-6 overall and they're still only a game out of a potential wild card spot in the NFC. So in the overall scheme of things, I don't think Arizona's loss is quite as bad as Denver's may be because that could be damaging to Denver's hopes of catching and or surpassing San Diego in the AFC West. Neither one of those teams is going to get in, Denver or San Diego, by the way, is going to get in as a wild card. You're going to have to win the West Division in order to be in the playoffs and get in as most likely the fourth seed. So I have to say Denver's loss is the worst. Bigger win last week, Joe says. Cleveland over Houston or Tampa Bay over Washington? I'm going to say Cleveland over Houston, Joe, because I think that win over the Texans stamps Cleveland as a legitimate playoff contender, really, for the first time all season in the AFC. Whereas Tampa, I think, has pretty much convinced everybody now that, after Dallas and Green Bay, Tampa's probably the third best team in the NFC. And I think they thought of them as a playoff team already. And now, even though the win over Washington might help solidify them as a potential contender in the NFC, I'm going to say Cleveland's was bigger because Cleveland's universe that they have to perform in is probably a tougher universe. And then he says, game you were looking most forward to this week, Green Bay in Dallas or Jacksonville in Indianapolis. Two great games. I really do hope to catch all if, or at least part of both of these games. But because I'm a longtime Cowboy fan, I'd have to say Green Bay and Dallas is the one I'm really looking forward to most this week, although I will certainly keep an eye peeled on Jacksonville and Indy for AFC playoff reasons. But Green Bay and Dallas, let's see which team is the NFC's best, at least for the regular season, which you can certainly make a substantial case for after the outcome of the game this Sunday. Plus the fact that the winner of the game will have a definitive leg up in home field advantage in the NFC. I think it'll be much, much tougher for Dallas to go to Green Bay in the playoffs than it would be for Green Bay to come to Dallas. So in that regard, I think it's I think the pressure right now is on the Cowboys to win at home against Green Bay on Sunday. It's going to be more difficult for them. So it's a bigger game in that regard. Green Bay, I think, is playing almost with house money, although I don't think they realized that. But nobody thought Green Bay was going to be this good. And I think there were some expectations in Dallas. Not to the extent that they're obviously 10-1, but there were more expectations in Dallas, I think, than in Green Bay. So I'd have to say the pressure on Dallas. Pressure on the Cowboys to prove that they are the best in the NFC over the Green Bay Packers. Joe, that's an excellent, excellent email, and I thank you for sharing and sending that to us today. All right, let's see if we can plow along here. This one comes from Brad, and he says, any follow-up on the clarity of Brady's calls and only Brady's calls on the NBC telecast? I haven't heard anything about it. No one asked Bill about it today either. Have any of you? No, unfortunately, I haven't. I'm assuming because it wasn't asked that it's pretty much a non-issue any longer. We surmised about this a little yesterday, not only on this show, but on PFW, and I didn't hear early in the show today in PFW Progress, so I'm not sure they talked about it at all. But frankly, I think, again, I'll reiterate what I mentioned to you yesterday, that this is a matter of a parabolic mic picking up sounds and signals from Tom and being pointed to the line of scrimmage, and you're being able to pick it up simply because the crowd noise is less when the Patriots have the ball than when the Eagles had the ball. I really don't think there's anything more to it than that. Don't think there's any kind of a conspiracy. I don't think anybody's trying to get back at, maybe they decided to turn the parabolic mic down because they realized that, you know, hey, we're really picking them up good, and there's a good chance here we might pick up an F-bomb or two, although, you know, television now operates in a 10-second delay. So, I don't think that there's a heck of a lot to it anymore than what we've already talked about, to be quite honest with you. This one comes from Glenn in Calgary, Alberta, who says, Richard Seymour has seemed invisible this season. What is the problem? Ooh. Glenn, first of all, my initial reaction to that question is that's kind of harsh. You realize, of course, that Richard Seymour missed six games, right? So take that into consideration, the fact that he was on the physically unable to perform list, and that he was allowed, a week or two to come back before he finally was activated by the Patriots, which he was. You have to realize that he's just now basically finishing his training camp. So he's just now kind of getting into the kind of shape that you might expect a player to be in when the regular season starts. And that's just now. And we've only got five games left in the regular season. So if we go by that formula, I think it's reasonable to assume that he'll be getting mid-season stride in his step and in his playing abilities, provided he continues to stay healthy. He probably will hit the kind of stride you expect of him about the time the playoffs start. And isn't that really what it's all about here? So I don't think you have to worry too much about Richard Seymour at all. All right, this one comes from Brad as well. I think it's the same guy. On Brandon Merriweather, he says, are you going to write him off already? I don't remember Sanders or Jarvis Green playing it all in their first season either. Nobody's writing off anybody. Nobody is writing off anybody. You know, I'm not sure what kind of expectations you had of a guy like Brandon Merriweather, other than the fact that he was a first-round draft pick. And so, obviously, when you're taken to the first round, there are big expectations placed on your shoulders. Well, you're a first-round draft pick. You must be a good player. And you're probably going to play a lot. Well, that's not necessarily the case, depending on the position that you play. I think in this particular instance, the Patriots have been fairly healthy. And early in the year when they were missing in the secondary Rodney Harrison because of his suspension, they were getting very solid performances from James Sanders. There just wasn't space. So what is Merriweather doing? He's trying to make his way on special teams, which is what most rookies do. I think Merriweather's going to get plenty of chances, plenty of opportunities to make his way onto the field. But write him off? Oh, you guys got to cut the guy some slack. That's extraordinary. All right, here we go. This one comes from Karthik. And he says, John, I did ask this question to the PFW guys, and I just want to get your opinion, too. He says, I think the team has lost its hope on Maroney, and I'm not blaming them since I think he's a dud. I hate to think it, but I have not seen anyone admit it. The Patriots have really missed big on the past two drafts. He says, in 2006, the only player worthy of his pick is Gostkowski. In 2007, we already cut the guy we picked in the fourth round, and Merriweather is nothing but a disappointment. I think the Patriots went away from their approach of choosing players based on value instead of choosing players based on need. Do you agree? No, I don't. And based on what I just talked about, Karthik, I'm not yet, even though I'm disappointed in Maroney, I'm disappointed because he doesn't seem to be durable. I'm not disappointed in Maroney because of his lack of ability, if that makes any sense. I think Lawrence Maroney has all the ability in the world. I think Lawrence Maroney has the ability to justify taking him where the Patriots took him. My problem with Lawrence Maroney is he just can't stay healthy. My problem with Lawrence Maroney is he seems to be a guy that, for lack of a better phrase here, goes down too easily. And can't bounce back from an injury. I don't know if that means he can't play hurt or what. Maybe he has a lower threshold for pain. I don't know. But it just seems like there are, you know, injuries that are almost inconsequential, almost non-existent, that he's missing time for, or so we're told by the team. And so I fret more over his durability than anything else. I think he's got all the talent in the world for running back. I also know that the Patriots have asked him to adjust some things about his running style that he has yet to adhere to. But I don't think he's a bust yet. I think he's underachieved a bit, but largely that's only because on his inability to stay on the field. As far as Merriweather being a disappointment, no, I'm not willing to say that yet. I'm just not. You can't say that basically not even three quarters of the way through your rookie season. You can't do that. See, we are an instant gratification society. If you are stamped a top round draft pick, a first round pick, then immediately people think, player, immediate impact. How is he going to affect the team? We're going to be better because so and so is a first round player. You know, that's just not true. It's just what you're doing is you're sugarcoating the whole thing. Now, it's true that teams have selected busts in the first round. Hello, Chris Canty. But the fact is that neither one of these guys in 06 or 07 is yet what I would categorize a bust. I just don't think that that is an appropriate categorization yet. If you want to say underachiever, okay, I'll buy that from Maroney. I'm still not yet quite buying that from Merriweather, because I just don't think he's been put in a position where they've needed him to be able to contribute. He's contributing where they've needed him to, and that's on special teams. And they've gotten solid play out of a guy like James Sanders, you know, who's stepped in for Eugene Wilson and for Rodney Harrison on a couple of separate occasions this year, and he's having a great year. That allows them to nurture and bring along a rookie. So I don't know that they went away from their approach of choosing players based on value. If anything, I think what they're doing is they're continuing to do that. I'd be curious to know, because I didn't hear them earlier, be curious to know, Karthik, what the guy said to you about that particular question. So if you have a chance to send another email, let me know what they said in answer to that. I'd be, you know, like I said, curious to know about that. All right, let's see if we can get another one in here before we break, and we got Jerry Sandusky again, the play-by-play voice of the Baltimore Ravens, coming up here in about 10 minutes. This one comes from Diane in Bridgeport, Connecticut, who says, John, if the Patriots go up a few touchdowns in games, what do you think of them using Moss or Welker as receivers on defense if there's a need? Well, based on Diane, Bill Belichick already saying, what are your plans in response to his plans for Troy Brown coming back, and would you put him in a defensive capability like he has done in the past or like you've used in the past? And his saying, no, he would not. He'd strictly be an offensive or special teams contributor. My guess would be that I don't think the Patriots have that in their arsenal. They may have put somebody like Moss or Welker, you know, in a kick return situation on a missed field goal or in a, you know, when you're trying to get in there and block a field goal or something like that, you know, maybe they put a guy like Randy Moss against the goalpost to block a long field goal attempt. I don't know. But as receivers on defense, if there's a need, nah. I don't know that that would necessarily be the case. I think they like their secondary enough, and certainly if they were going to do something like that, you'd have to put Troy Brown in there first, wouldn't you? I mean, doesn't he have the experience to go that way? And Belichick's already said, no, that's not in our plans for him at this time. So I don't know that that would necessarily be the case. Novel idea. I don't know if either one of those guys would really stand for it. Don't know if they have clauses in their contracts that would either A, keep them from doing it, or B, give them bonus for, you know, minutes played on the field. Who knows? Could always enter into it. But I tend to doubt that that would be a part of their game plan overall. Webradio@patriots.com is the email address. Again, I'd love to hear from you today if you have some ideas on what you think the Patriots personnel set should be in the absence of Roosevelt Colvin going on the injured reserve list. Who should get the playing time? Can you pick a player? Pick a player. Who should get more playing time now that Rosie Colvin is gone for the year? Easy enough question, right? Webradio@patriots.com. Webradio@patriots.com. Who should get the playing time now that Rosie Colvin is gone for the year? All right, we'll continue taking your emails on that topic and other questions, comments, concerns, criticisms that you may have. And again, coming up in just a few minutes, Jerry Sandusky of the Baltimore Ravens, the radio play-by-play voice, will join us coming up after this.
He's been a three-time champion, two-time Super Bowl MVP, and kicked off 2007 on a record pace.
Three touchdown passes in the first half.
Now, Tom Brady has signed official Patriots mini replica helmets, and you can get one free. Exclusively from the New England Patriots, this authentic mini helmet comes complete with chin strap, face mask, and Tom Brady's autograph. Perfect for every Patriots fan. To take advantage of this incredible one-of-a-kind offer, all you need to do is make qualifying transactions on your Bank of America Patriots Extra Points Visa card. Plus, with your card, you'll earn Patriots Extra Points, redeemable for once-in-a-lifetime Patriots experiences, pregame field passes, memorabilia, merchandise, tickets, and much more. Don't wait. Apply at PatriotsExtraPoints.com or call 1-800-NFL-9929 to get your Bank of America Patriots Extra Points Visa card and a free official mini replica helmet autographed by Tom Brady. Patriots Extra Points, because fans want contact too. Autograph mini helmet limited to those making a qualifying purchase. See details at PatriotsExtraPoints.com.
All right, Jimmy, it's the big day and we gotta go. Patriots kick off in an hour. Let's make sure we got everything.
All right, let's see. Face paint.
Check.
Helmets.
Check.
Foam fingers.
Check.
Jerseys.
Check.
Checks.
Check.
Check card.
Check.
That's everything.
Let's go, Pats!
Woo!
Let's go, Pats! Let's go, Pats! Let's go!
Check, check, check. That's right. If you really are a true Patriots fan, then you need to open a New England Patriots checking account from Bank of America today. You'll get checks, check cards, and even bank statements, all with the official New England Patriots logo. Bank of America is the official bank of the New England Patriots. So take advantage of this opportunity to make every day game day.
Let's go, Pats!
And sign up for a New England Patriots checking account today. Bank of America. Bank of Opportunity.
Bank of America N.A. Member FDIC. New England Patriots trademarks, including the Patriots logo, are the property of New England Patriots L.P. and are used pursuant to a licensing agreement with New England Patriots L.P. 2007 Bank of America Corporation. All rights reserved.
Well, it's that time of year again where Sunday means you're doing something football. Whether it's tailgating in the parking lot, throwing the pigskin around, or just hanging in and watching the game on the tube, it's all about football. And when you're not watching football or playing football, well, I think we both know you're thinking football. And all that can make you a little hungry. That's why there's the tasty snack wrap from McDonald's. Snack wraps now come in your choice of three flavors. New Chipotle barbecue, honey mustard, and ranch. And they're available with grilled or crispy chicken. Delicious and easy to eat. It's the perfect game time snack. So grab one today. And when you do, if you're looking at that chicken select and it kind of reminds you of a quarterback in the middle of the pocket, except now he's surrounded by cheddar jack cheese, ranch sauce, and lettuce, well, maybe you're thinking just a little too much about football. McDonald's. I'm loving it.
When you've got a lineman-size hunger and want the awesome, authentic taste of Gillette Stadium at your tailgate or right at home, tackle that appetite with Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Try Sac Attack sausages, first down franks, or Patriots brats in a wide variety of flavors at home, at the stadium, or at the game. And get your crowd cheering for Gridiron Grillers. They're great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are all you'll need for the perfect tailgate or home barbecue. Check out all of the Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Mild and hot Sac Attack sausages, Patriots cheese brats and beer brats, first down franks and more. Patriots Gridiron Grillers go great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are available at Big Y, Demoulas Market Basket, Hannaford, Johnny's Foodmaster, Roach Brothers Sudbury Farm, Shaw's, and Stop and Shop, and distributed by Agar, Associated Grocers of Maine, and Associate Grocers of New England, and CNS Wholesale. Patriots Gridiron Grillers, when you just can't wait for Sunday.
Let's go, let's go, let's go. Tempo in and out of the huddle. I want to go odd. 5-51 mirror.
This is Patriots Playbook.
Go stack guts combat. Odd. 51 mirror.
Patriots Playbook. Breaking down last Sunday's game.
They're looking for man coverage in the zone. They didn't have anybody to throw to. Just stay outside on the 7 route.
Next Sunday's game.
Be ready for the greats check too, okay? Because we'll get the punch on 3rd and short. Even. 51 greats. Even. 51 greats.
And the rest of the 2007 NFL
yeah,
season.
Go ahead and hit it in there because the backers are going to fast read over the top.
And some of the fun stuff in between. Now, here's John Rook on Patriots Playbook.
Come on, let's go, let's go.
Hour number two of Patriots Playbook here on Patriots.com Radio for a Wednesday. It's midweek, although we've got an extra day to work with this week because of the Monday night game coming up against the Ravens this next Monday at M&T Bank Stadium in Baltimore. So it's not quite the normal Wednesday. Normally on Wednesday we have the conference calls with the opposing coach and one of the players on that team, but those will actually be taking place tomorrow. However, I can tell you that, again, in a few minutes, we're scheduled to be joined by Jerry Sandusky, who is the radio voice of the Baltimore Ravens, and get some of his perspective and take on this five-game losing streak that the Ravens are going through right now, number one. But number two, in the latter part of this hour, toward the end of the hour, we will definitely get into the Patriots locker room and let you hear from the Patriots players themselves on preparations this week for the Ravens. Tom Brady, Dalis Thomas, Eric Alexander, and I believe Stallworth is who we also heard from as well. So all that's coming up at the tail end of this hour, and we'll get into the locker room for you. I mentioned a little while ago that the Patriots, as good as things have been throughout the course of the season, they have set several records. They probably will continue to set not only more team, but maybe even NFL records overall in the final 5 weeks of the season as the numbers begin to kind of pile up a little bit here. So it's always a good thing. And actually, it's gotten very, very difficult to keep up with most of it. Certainly, it's gotten difficult to keep up with all of it. But it's gotten also difficult to just keep up even with most of it. And yet, there are some milestones approaching here that you may or may not have been aware of that the Patriots are actually approaching in some individual as well as team numbers that's been compiled here by the Patriots PR staff that I thought was kind of interesting. I'd like to pass along to you because, as we all know, this is a time to certainly celebrate being a Patriots fan, given some of the futility in previous years that's gone by. By the way, first of all, 11th division title now in 48 years? Doesn't sound like a whole lot, right? Eight of them have come in the regime of Robert Kraft and family. So I think that's significant to note. All right, here we go. Milestones. Mike Vrabel needs a half a sack to reach 10 sacks for the season. That would set a new career high. And he'd be the first Patriot player with 10 or more sacks since Willie McGinnis had that back in 1995. That's pretty significant, I think, overall. I didn't realize it had been that long since a Patriot player had been in double digits in quarterback sacks. So that's one for you. We'll get to more in a couple of moments. Right now, though, we do want to bring in Jerry Sandusky, who calls the games for the Baltimore Ravens, joining us here inside Patriots Playbook. Jerry, thank you for a little time today. It's great to hear from you and great to talk to you.
John, a pleasure to visit with you as well. I was interested in hearing some more of those milestones because I was going through them myself today. It's almost numbing after a while when you look at all that Patriots organization has accomplished.
Well, that's kind of what we've been trying to take on a week-by-week basis. And like I mentioned, quite frankly, it's a little bit tough to keep up with. But it's just one of those extraordinary years that just seemed, and I've called this a couple of times, I've called it the perfect storm, especially in offense, where just a bunch of things have conspired to go right all at the same time.
And a big part of that is you have great players, great system, and great health on offense. I mean, flip side of the coin, in Baltimore, we've had nothing but injury after injury, and the Ravens haven't had a chance really to put their offense together all year. So to watch the Patriots, who put together a month's worth of offense every quarter, it's mind-boggling.
Absolutely. That's one of the things that I wanted to talk to you about right off the bat, Jerry, is quite frankly, Baltimore's team was a team I think that everybody thought was going to end up competing, you know, for a potential Super Bowl spot out of the AFC this year. If you can put your finger on one or two things, what has kept them from realizing that?
The two things, injuries and turnovers.
Okay.
Second play of the season, Steve McNair pulls a groin muscle, and the Ravens haven't healed since. From that point forward, one Pro Bowl player after the next started to go down. But what compounded it all was, game after game, just a ridiculous number of turnovers. You know, a year ago, the Ravens were plus 17. I think the Patriots are plus 19 right now. So it gives you an idea of how the Ravens were playing. This year, they're dead last in the NFL in turnover ratio at minus 11. So in 1 year, to have 28 turnover swing, you're not going to beat many people when that happens.
That's also very true. In fact, I guess I didn't really realize it was that significant, but when you put it like that and you say, yeah, that's a 28 turnover difference, you can see where that can really hamstring, literally, a team.
Yeah, well, and you mentioned hamstring. Todd Heap's been out for five games with a hamstring, and the Ravens' whole offense was predicated on Todd Heap. So while you've had the perfect storm, we've had the perfect nightmare. Injuries, turnovers, and now, you know, the psychology of a losing streak. So this is an interesting matchup this week, simply because it's either going to be the grandest irony of the year with the Ravens pulling off the upset, or the grandest agony of the year with the Ravens running into the red-hot Patriots.
You know, that's an interesting way to look at it, and I think that that's what makes the Ravens a dangerous opponent, number one, because I think all things being equal, being healthy, the Ravens certainly would be right there with the Patriots in terms of talent and ability. But number two, how much of the fact that, you know, with this Baltimore team not going anywhere into the playoffs with a 4-7 record right now, how much of a fact that this could end up being their playoff game, how much will that help them in preparation for Monday?
Oh, I think that's a huge focus point of the Ravens. They're not worried about week 14, 15, and 16 right now. They know that this is kind of the Army-Navy game, and the Ravens are Army. They have no bowl game to play for. They have no January to think about this year. It's been a season that's had very few upticks. So they look at this Monday night game as the chance to at least have the opportunity to celebrate if they can pull off the upset of the season.
Mm-hmm. I think that in seeing some of the quotes already that I've seen, I know that Samari Roll has been quoted, Brian Billick has been quoted, and there's a good piece just a short while ago on USA Today about some of the struggles that this Ravens team has gone through. The fact is that the players seem to be pointing this direction, and Brian Billick himself has said, this is an opportunity for us in front of our home folks to show the potential that this team has. Do you still buy into that?
Absolutely. You know, the Ravens, and this is not just drink the Kool-Aid. I think this is really season in a night. The Ravens know they cannot have a great season now. So all they have to look forward to is to try to have one great night on national TV so that people can look at the Ravens and say, hey, you know, they really weren't just making excuses. Maybe the injuries and the turnovers really did capsize what could have been a great season. Since they can't have a great season, the last thing they have to look forward to at least put a could-have tag on the season.
Well, Jerry Sandusky again, who calls the games for the Baltimore Ravens, joining us here on Patriots Playbook. Now, I've noticed a strange number, there's got to be a trick to this number, but Baltimore quarterbacks have lost 10 fumbles this year. Why is that?
Boy, part of it is pressure. Steve McNair wasn't mobile when he has played because of the groin and then the back injury. He used to be much more elusive, and he would get out of the way of some of the sacks. So you have a lot of hits coming on the quarterbacks especially McNair, when he couldn't get out of the way. And Kyle Bowler, his track record has always been a high degree of inconsistency in that sometimes he does not care for the ball. He doesn't tuck it away when he should. He doesn't feel the pressure sometimes when he should. And those add up to fumbles.
Right. Defensively, we talked to Ron Jaworski in the last hour, and he said that it's pretty clear to see that because of some of the injuries that the Ravens have sustained in the secondary, that it's really hampered the defense's overall effectiveness in order to help keep their team in games. This seems to be the type of a setup, though, for the Patriots that would play into their favor, given what we know the Patriots can do with a passing offense. So I guess my question to you is maybe one that you can't necessarily answer, but how do the Ravens prepare for Tom Brady and those receivers?
With a lot of hope, because I'll tell you exactly what I think you have to do. First and foremost, the Ravens coaching staff has to figure out that in a best-case scenario, how would we attack Tom Brady? And as I've watched the Patriot tapes, I think there's only one way you can limit Tom Brady's effectiveness, and that is you have to figure out a way to prevent him from stepping into his throws. When Brady has the time to step into his throws, he is arguably the most precise, pretty passer anybody's ever had. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's uncanny how good his throwing is when he steps into the throws. When you either get strong pressure up the middle or force him to throw on the run and he doesn't have the chance to plant, step, and throw, if you take that three-part sequence away from him, it's the only time you limit his effectiveness. So I think that's step one for the Ravens, is make that the focus of their game. And step two becomes finding ways with limited personnel to make that happen. That means exotic blitzes. That means unusual pressure. And I think it will mean lining up players in positions you would not normally see them in. You know, last week we saw Haloti Ngata line up at safety against the San Diego Chargers and then come on a safety blitz. And I think that's the type of thing the Ravens are going to have to do, is be creative and find ways to make sure Brady doesn't get to step into his throw. Because if he does, quite honestly, I don't think it matters who the cornerback is. Brady can complete the pass with those receivers to anybody if he can step into his throws.
Sure. I think we all realize also that where Baltimore has excelled in defensively is certainly against the run as well, and it's still pretty physical presence defensively. So, to me, anyway, knowing what's coming sometimes isn't as easy to defend or to move the ball against. Now, on the other side of the football, I know that it seems to me to be an objective for a lot of teams to hold on to the football as much as they can and keep the football out of Brady's hands, keep the football away from the Patriots' offense. Do you think the way that the Ravens perhaps become effective on Monday night?
I think that's the way anybody becomes effective. The problem is that the Ravens' offense has not been cohesive and consistent enough this year to go into a game and realistically think, we're going to put together 6 10-play drives. This is an offense that hasn't had more than one touchdown pass in any game this year. The Ravens at times run the ball well, but not so well that you could say, hey, this is a team that's just going to keep running and running and running. So without Todd Heap, if he plays, it makes a big difference this week. Without Todd Heap, the Ravens don't have that ball control variable that they would need to run the clock on the Patriots. Would they love to run the clock? Absolutely. Will they be able to run the clock? I don't think they'll have that much luck against the Patriots if they don't have Todd Heap.
What is the latest on Todd Heap that you could tell us? I know the injury report comes out a little bit later, but any idea?
Yeah, they're very optimistic that they will have Todd Heap this week. And the other guy the Ravens are hoping to have for the first time this year is the backup, Dan Wilcox. They've been playing with their third-string tight end all year in Quinn Sibnewski. They're hopeful Todd Heap can go. They're pretty optimistic Dan Wilcox will go. And if that happens, it finally gives the Ravens the one thing that they need, and that is somebody who can stretch the middle of the field.
Mm-hmm.
They have not had that guy who can stretch things out in the middle of the field and then open it up over the middle for Derek Mason or Mark Clayton. Right now, it's really fairly easy for defensive coordinators to just figure out, who are we going to take away here? Do we want to take away Mason? We'll take away Clayton. And that limits your passing options for Kyle Bowler, who is not nearly as consistent and precise a passer as a Tom Brady. So I think the Ravens offense has been kind of a dream for defensive coordinators to look at, because with the lack of healthy bodies, they don't have the variables they need to put a defense like the Patriots in too many difficult situations where you can have 8, 9, 10 play drives.
Sure. Makes a lot of sense in my estimation. How much of this 4-7 season has to lay at the feet of Brian Billick?
You know, unless Brian Billick has a degree in athletic training, I don't know you can put too much at his feet. It's a type of a thing where I've always believed two variables have a great deal of consistency when you look at Super Bowl teams, and that is they don't turn the ball over and they stay healthy. You know, if the Ravens stay healthy and Steve McNair's the quarterback and Todd Heap's the tight end, Willis McGahee runs behind a healthy line instead of a line that spent much of the season with three rookies, I think the turnover numbers turn back to the positive side, and then Billick looks a lot more shrewd as an offensive coordinator play caller. Mm-hmm. But with the scenario he has, the biggest challenge Brian Billick faces is making sure he finds ways for this team to look at every game, not just the New England game, as a game that still has some meaning.
Right. I wonder, on top of all of this, with Billick having the struggles that he's had, with the team struggling with injuries, with his team struggling to move the football and such, I know that Rick Neuheisel, being the offensive coordinator, is still getting mentioned as a potential candidate for college jobs. And I know Rick from his days in the United States Football League some 20-odd years ago. Is he, number one, interested in moving on again? Number two, how much does this help or set back this team if he does go?
Well, I think it's it doesn't help the team, but the fact that he is such a name in the mix of a lot of college jobs right now, that's a big reason why Brian Billick has not handed over the play calling. With the situation the Ravens are in, if Rick Neuheisel is going to be here for 5 more years, I think he takes over the play calling. I think Brian Billick knows that right now he has to try to punch some different buttons. But he doesn't want to go to Rick Neuheisel as the play caller. If Neuheisel suddenly turns out to be a head coach in college in the next 10 days and has to leave, because that would be disruptive and counterproductive. And the more you talk to Rick Neuheisel, the more you realize this is a guy who would really love to be a college head coach again. He loves Saturdays. He's had great success, and I think it's inevitable that he becomes a college head coach, if not in the near future, in the very near future.
Best case scenario, Jerry, how does this team finish up here, and what should they do in an effort to get themselves back, I guess, on an even keel and in a position to compete again for next season?
Well, a couple of things. Best case scenario, obviously, they pull off the upset of the year on Monday night, and they're able to get a couple of wins in the last 5 games, so that they don't go into the off season feeling like they have completely capsized as an organization. Second thing they have to do is get some clarity on the quarterback situation. Is Steve McNair done? They need to know that. They need to know whether McNair's back next year, because I don't think organizationally they're sold on the idea of Kyle Bowler being the quarterback here for the next 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
And then the third thing they're going to have to get a sense of is which veterans will return, which veterans can come back from their injuries, or which veterans cannot. Does Trevor Price come back next year, who's been a great pass rusher throughout his career? Does Jonathan Ogden come back next year? And if not, what the plan will be moving forward. So, you know, I think December is very much going to be for the Ravens. On Monday night, a chance to take a shot at feeling good for once this season. And then from that point forward, it has to be, this becomes training camp. This becomes finding out which young guys have the ability to step up in the spotlight, deliver on a consistent basis, so the team goes into next season with a little bit more clarity about what they really have on the roster.
Good stuff. Jerry Sandusky, covering the Baltimore Ravens, joining us here inside the playbook. Thank you for spending some time today. Best of luck to you. Continued success, and we hope to do it again at some point.
My pleasure, and you guys enjoy the wild rolling numbers up there in New England.
As best as we can. Appreciate that, Jerry. Thank you. All right, that's Jerry Sandusky again, who is the play-by-play voice of the Baltimore Ravens, joining us here inside the playbook. And, you know, you can almost sense, I think just a little bit anyway, a wistfulness about what he's talking about. Because, you know, they're only 6, 7 years removed from their own Super Bowl championship. And one of the most dominating defenses that, you know, the NFL has seen certainly in a long time, certainly since the 85 Bears, that Baltimore Ravens defense in 2000 was as tough as it gets. And so you'd like to think, from a Baltimore perspective, that this team, this franchise, could get back to that point again. A lot of people thought that this team would be back at that stage, or at least close to that caliber of play, when they went 13-3 in the regular season and had a bye in the opening round of the playoffs before they moved on, that they'd be back there this year. But the injuries have killed them. And I think he hit the nail on the head, and this comes from someone who really is a novice when it comes to, you know, covering the Ravens and knowing a lot about the Ravens. This is why we get their people on, because they can bring us more of the insight than we can give you, and that stands to reason. It's a team that they cover day in and day out. But I think that has got to be the number one issue that the Ravens deal with coming up soon, and that is what to do about Steve McNair, what to do about your quarterback. And if Kyle Bowler is not your guy, and I thought they sort of determined that a year or two ago when they decided to pick up McNair. If Bowler's not your guy, you've got to go out and get a guy. Maybe the Ravens think about a quarterback if one is available. It's conceivable. It's possible. And I don't think McNair is going to come back. I think he's pretty much at the point now where he's done. I think his injuries are going to allow him to be done, although he's not going to suit up, at least we're told, for this Sunday with the Patriots. Bowler is going to apparently get that start again. That's a definitive question that has to be answered. I think that have to be issue number one for the Ravens. But, you know, once they get healthy and they bring some of their workable parts back into place, especially defensively, I think we saw early in this particular season the Ravens are imminently capable of doing damage and of stopping people. And of playing, and playing well, playing at a very high level, in fact. So because of that, you know, I think the Ravens, it won't take much, especially on that side of the football, to get back to where they were. Or as the song goes, get back where you want to be. All right, let's get back also to milestones for the Patriots, because I've got a whole list of them here that I wanted to share with you today. We talked about Vrabel needing 10 sacks in the season, set a new career high. And he's got 9.5, so he needs one half more sack to become the first Patriot to get double digits in sacks since 95. Patriots need one win to become just the fourth team in 48 years of franchise history to win at least 12 games in a regular season. The other teams were 2003, 2004, and 2006. Of course, the 03 and 04 teams both won 14 games. But, you know, of all the superlatives that have happened with this franchise, especially in this decade, only four are going to win 12. Kevin Faulk needs one more touchdown to become the 16th player in franchise history to record at least 25 touchdowns for his career in a Patriots uniform. Speaks to his not only his versatility, it speaks to his longevity and his ability to be able to produce, you know, when it's money time, when you gotta get the score. Brady needs one touchdown pass to hit 40 on the season. He would become just the fourth NFL player in history to throw for 40 or more touchdowns in a season. Can you name the other three? Well, you know Peyton Manning at 49, right? So he's, you know, still needs 10 to match Manning, 11 to pass him in the last five games. Marino had 48 and 44. Marino did it twice. He had 48 and 84. He had 44 and 86. And then Kurt Warner had 41 touchdown passes in 1999. So he needs one to join that 40-touchdown club. Randy Moss needs two more touchdown receptions to set a new career high. He has 16. His personal best 17 touchdowns with Minnesota. He did that in 98 and in again in 2003. Let's see. Bill Belichick needs two wins to reach 100 wins in his regular season and playoff career as Patriots head coach. I think that's all the ones that I had left on my list here within one of surpassing or matching a particular record. Yep, that's it. Let's see if there's a couple of others that are close here. Oh, here's the other ones that could happen this week. Randy Moss needs three catches to reach 750 in his career, and he would become the 25th player in NFL history to reach 750 career receptions. So that could come down this week. Lawrence Maroney needs two touchdowns rushing. He has two on the season. He needs two more to become the 19th player in Patriots history to record at least 10 rushing touchdowns in a Patriots uniform. Steve Gostkowski needs 3 more points to reach 200 career points in his first 2 years. And believe it or not, he'd be the 19th player in Patriots history to reach 200 career points. And he'd have done it in 2 years. Tells you he's the benefactor of some of that offense, right? Let's see, what else we have here. Randy Moss needs 5 more receiving yards to become the 5th player in Patriots history to have at least 1,100 receiving yards in a season. Can you name the other 4 players? Stanley Morgan, Troy Brown, Ben Coates, Terry Glenn. And Terry Glenn did it twice. He's the only one that's done it twice. Let's see. And a little bit on the outside looking in, but I guess considering what he did this last weekend, it's conceivable. It's conceivable he could get close, if not match this record this week. But Wes Welker needs 9 more catches, 9 more receptions to become the 4th player in Patriots history to record at least 90 receptions in a season. The others to do it, Troy Brown, who did it twice, Ben Coates, and Terry Glenn. Troy, of course, had 101 in 2001. And let's see, Kevin Faulk, 11 receiving yards. He'll pass Cedric Jones to move into 15th place on the Patriots' all-time receiving yardage list. So these are all the numbers that would apparently be attainable, in theory, this week against Baltimore. Quite a list, don't you think? I thought that was rather significant. Quite a list. But, you know, again, hardly a week goes by when we don't come up with, you know, 1 or 2 things. And this week looks like there's about 8 or 9 things on this particular list of achievable milestones that the Patriots are approaching. And so there you go. Some significant numbers to be thinking about as you kind of read between the lines of this matchup with the Baltimore Ravens coming up on Monday night. Let's see what else we have for you. Some other things, some other team superlatives right now. And both, I believe, Jerry Sandusky and Ron Jaworski mentioned this today, but the Patriots' turnover differential is plus 16. Plus 16 on the season, leading the NFL in turnover differential. So that's another reason why, you know, the teams that are on the plus side are usually the best teams in the league. Patriots have only turned the ball over 9 times all year, which is the lowest giveaway number in the entire league as well. Let's see, 12 drives this season of 10 or more plays that the Patriots have allowed this season on defense, which is tied for the lowest, the fewest in the NFL. The Patriots also have a good shutout going, a good shutout streak, a strong shutout streak going right at this stage. They have not allowed any points on an opponent's first possession of the season all year long. Were you aware of that? I wasn't aware of that until I read this. They have not given up a point, 0, on an opponent's first offensive possession of the game. They're the only team in the NFL right now to not allow an opponent to score on an opening drive. That's getting off to a great start. And, of course, as you know, the Patriots have scored on every first drive that the offense has had this year. So they're never playing from behind. You can relax, you can get into the zone, you can, you know, do a lot of things when you're playing with a lead as opposed to playing from behind. That's a really remarkable statistical advantage that the Patriots have, and I don't think it gets quite enough credit for being what it is, but quite frankly, that's impressive. Very impressive. And when you consider the fact the Patriots have started their drives this year on about their own 26-yard line, and when you think, well, that's not terrible, consider this. That is the worst starting field position of any team in the NFL. That's for the opponents, that is. The Patriots' opponents have started on the 26, which is the lowest total in the NFL. So that's pretty impressive defensively, anyway, for the Patriots. Let's see, what else? Oh, I know that Brian Lowe mentioned this yesterday, and I thought it was striking that, you know, in terms of the Pro Bowl voting, that you got Chris Hansen, who's, you know, apparently leading the punters, even though he doesn't technically qualify for any of the statistical categories because he just hasn't punted enough times, which was, I found, bizarre. But the Patriots as a whole have punted only 24 times all season long. So I made myself a note to try to look this up. That's the fewest punts of any team in the NFL. But the next team closest to the Patriots' 24 punts, Colts, with 35. How about that? 11 fewer punts than the Colts this season. I think that's extraordinary. So there you go. I hope you had some fun with those numbers, because quite frankly, I had fun looking them up, and several of them I really shook my head with, because I'm like, that can't be right. That can't be right. So I'm going back and I'm checking it again. And I said, oh, it's right. It's right. Absolutely. So good job of the Patriots PR staff of coming up with some of these numbers so we can share them with you here inside the playbook. I mentioned also a little earlier how the playoff picture has begun to start to take shape and some things. I mean, obviously we're in week 12 or game week 12. It's week 13 in the NFL overall, with everybody having played and gone through their bye week now. And the Patriots, of course, clinching the AFC East Division title after their 11th game, Week 12, which ties the record for earliest clinch, thanks to Buffalo's loss this past week. So Patriots are obviously in the playoff as a division champ, and they get to host a game. That much is a fait accompli. We know it already. Patriots certainly have everything on their side in terms of giving home field advantage throughout the playoffs, which would mean two home games and a potential AFC championship game, of course, as a part of that at home at Gillette Stadium coming up in January. So you've got a lot of great things to be looking forward to, and you can start to kind of focus that way now, because there are 5 weeks left in the regular season, and while, you know, nobody down the hallway at Gillette Stadium is going to start thinking about that, it's a little bit more conceivable and a little bit more pragmatic if we start thinking about it and start looking toward that, because it's an inevitability, right? The playoff picture overall in the NFC, nobody has clinched yet. Nobody has been eliminated yet. But this weekend, you've got Dallas and or Green Bay who can move into the playoffs, at least become the first NFC teams to get in here in week 13. And, of course, you go 17 weeks when you count the bye weeks, so it's still relatively early. Cowboys clinch the NFC East title with a win and a Giants loss. They do clinch a playoff berth with a win or a tie, and a New Orleans loss or tie, and an Arizona loss or tie. Green Bay can clinch the NFC North this weekend if they beat Dallas and Detroit loses or ties. Green Bay can clinch a playoff berth if they win or they tie, or if New Orleans loses or ties, and Arizona and Chicago also the same scenarios. So Dallas and Green Bay, whoever wins that shootout on Sunday, whoever wins the game, will at least clinch a playoff spot, and they'll be the first team in the NFC to clinch. The Colts can become the next team in the AFC to clinch anything playoff-wise after the Patriots, because the Patriots are the only team that have clinched anything with the East Division. And, of course, with that, Miami now becomes the first team in the National Football League out of 32. They are the first team officially eliminated from the playoffs at 0-11. They're eliminated. Shocking, I know, but it is true, mathematically speaking. The Colts can clinch a playoff berth this weekend, but they need a lot of help if they're going to get it this weekend. The Colts need to win against Jacksonville. Plus, Buffalo has to lose or tie, Tennessee has to lose, and Denver has to lose or tie. But if all those scenarios happen, then the Colts clinch the spot. They could also do it if San Diego loses or ties, Tennessee loses, Buffalo loses or ties, and of course they again beat Jacksonville. So it's probably not quite as clear-cut for the Colts to clinch a playoff spot this weekend, but it is possible, mathematically speaking, and so we wanted to pass that along to you, because that will probably be, the playoff update will probably be a weekly staple from here on out as we get a little bit closer and we get more teams that are not only entering the picture, but more teams that are mathematically eliminated from the playoff process. Of course, the NFL's goal is to keep everybody as active and as involved and as eligible for the playoffs as possible. That's why they like the parity in the league. And I would argue again that, you know, that's one of the reasons why, in particular, you know, a league like the NFL can thrive on a dominant team. Not only because people follow the dominant team and everybody loves to climb on the bandwagon of a winner, but there are just as many people out there, I feel, that want to see, you know, King Kong knocked down a peg. They want to see Goliath slain by David. They want to see the big cheese fall. And so you've got a lot of positive publicity and a lot of negativity that's going there at the same time, all toward the same team. So it helps galvanize interest more than anything else. So that's how a dominant team, I think, can be good for a particular sports league. In this instance, the Patriots within the NFL. So, you know, there's two ways, I guess, of looking at it. That seems to be the way that seems to be prevalent right now, and certainly a popular way of thinking, because I know that there are a lot of people. There's no middle ground where the Patriots are concerned. No middle ground at all. You either love them or you hate them, if you're looking at them from outside, you know, your own little Patriot nation here. By the way, more about the division clinch the Patriots had. It's the earliest division clinch since 1978, which, of course, is the first year that the NFL established the 16-game regular season schedule. The other teams that have clinched the division during the 11th game weekend since 78 were all significantly strong teams, the 85 Bears, the 97 49ers, and the 2004 Philadelphia Eagles. Of course, they lost the Super Bowl to the Patriots that year, but they did clinch after the 11th game, or week 12 in their particular season, in the NFC East that year. So the Patriots joining some rare company where early clinches are concerned, since the NFL moved to that 16-game regular season schedule back in 1978. Hard to believe that that has been almost 30 years. 30 years. 29 years, actually, but it's been almost 30 years since the NFL moved to the 16-game schedule. Is there anybody else out there besides me that remembers the 14-game schedule and the six preseason games that you had to slug through? You know, I don't recall. I mean, I realized that after about four games, preseason games, you know, 30 years ago, it did get a little tedious. But I don't recall the six games being as tedious as the four games are now that teams play in the preseason. And I wonder, why is that? Is it because there's so much more emphasis placed in the regular season and getting started? Is it because there's so much more interest overall in the NFL? I think probably a little bit of both. And I think there's a lot of interest or a lot of emphasis placed on injuries and trying to get into the season as healthy as possible, because the game has just gotten faster as the players have gotten bigger and stronger and quicker themselves. And so I think there are just more impacting injuries now and more huge collision injuries. And I think, therefore, it's just harder to stay healthier now than it was, say, 20 to 30 years ago. Because the way the game has just gotten faster and stronger. And so I think that it's all a part of it, at least a little bit. But I just find that bizarre when I think about it. It doesn't seem like it's been that long. It's been almost 30 years since we've lived in this 16-game universe, and we've had, you know, four preseason games. And how many years now have we been talking about, and we'll talk about it again next year, shortening the preseason from the four that we have now? I don't ever see that happening, ever. It's free money for the owners. Free money. They don't have to pay the salaries until the regular season starts, and they can charge the same ticket prices, they can charge the same for concessions, everything. It's free money. You might see them shorten it by one. I don't know that that'll ever happen, because, again, you're asking the owners to give away free money. We can talk about it until we're blue in the face. I think that's about as done deal, not happening, as there ever may be in the National Football League. All right, what else do we have for you here, tidbit-wise? We're going to get to the locker room here in a couple of moments. Tom Brady, Adalys Thomas, Eric Alexander, who is certainly a frequently visited player by the media earlier today and yesterday as well, simply because of now his stand to see more playing time. He did, of course, as you recall, start the AFC Championship game at linebacker for the Patriots last year, and stands to at least to get more playing time in the rotation of the linebacking corps this year due to Roosevelt Colvin's injury. So we've got Eric Alexander and I believe also Dante Stallworth in terms of interviews. Whoa. Whew, almost stepped on that one. In terms of interviews in the locker room for you. So we'll get underway with that here in about 5 minutes. In the meantime, a couple of other things. Patriots, this is the first time that they have ever clinched a division title in the month of November. Their previous earliest clinch prior to this year would have been December the 7th of 2003. And they beat Miami that year, and they clinched the division title. What would that be? That would be week 14, I guess, probably. Yeah, week 14. So that would have been their previous earliest clinch, as I'm looking at some of these numbers here out of the record book. And, here's the other thing I wanted to bring up. Yeah, I almost forgot this one. And, again, another significant number here for the Patriots when you compare it to other teams in the NFL. You probably realize this. You probably already know this. And yet, it hit me like a ton of lead bricks here. Patriots are winning 84% of their games since Thanksgiving, from Thanksgiving on since 2001. And that is by far and away the best record in the National Football League. It's not even really close. Think about that again. Since 2001, on games played in the NFL, from Thanksgiving Day on, which is a good extra month to the regular season, right? The Patriots are 41-8. That's an 84% winning percentage. And it's by far and away better than anybody else. It's the next closest record is Pittsburgh, 33-12. 73%. So you can see how far behind the Patriots' 84% that really is. The Eagles are 31-17. The Colts, 28-19 after Thanksgiving since 2001. Pretty impressive. Pretty impressive. So when I saw that number this week, I said, that's one we're talking about. 41-8 since Thanksgiving. So it only bode well, I think, for not only what's going on this year, but for the opportunity and the chance, I think, to continue to play at a high level and also to, challenge 16-0. We really haven't mentioned the phrase 16-0 a lot in the last couple of weeks. And I think it's probably because it's already been done quite a bit. But nevertheless, we really haven't taken the time or the wherewithal to discuss it. And I have a feeling that about this time next month, we'll be discussing it big time because the Patriots will be on the verge of getting to that point at 16-0 with the last regular season game against the New York Giants, provided they can avoid the pitfalls like they almost fell into this last Sunday. And I do believe that Baltimore, potentially, is one of those spots. And, of course, next week when Pittsburgh comes into Gillette, that's another one of those spots as well. The next 2 weeks are big. Next 2 weeks are big. Of course, you follow that up with the Jets and Miami before wrapping it up with the Giants. But, the Ravens are capable. Make no mistake about it. Any team in this league is capable of catching lightning in a bottle. Philadelphia almost did. So before you poo-poo it and you think, the Ravens have no shot because they don't have an offense. There's always the chance that game could exist where the Patriots turn it over and a team puts together an effort like the Eagles did against the Patriots, and you combine those two plus the Patriots being on the road and wham, now you got something to talk about. So I guess the best thing here as a fandom, as members of Patriots Nation go, it is good to take it one at a time. It is good to perhaps respect your opponent and know that your opponent is eminently capable of winning, because I can guarantee you the guys down the hallway think that way. All right, speaking of the guys down the hallway, Tom Brady, Adalys Thomas, Eric Alexander, and Dante Stallworth in the Patriots locker room as the preparations continue for the Baltimore Ravens next Monday night in Baltimore. Same patch time, same patch channel tomorrow right here on Patriots.com radio, and we'll talk to you then. Right now, let's get into the locker room.
Tom Brady.
It's great. It's great to see him. I know he's excited. He's been working very, very hard for a long time, and it's great to have him up and available, and I sure hope he makes a big impact on the team. And he always does, just with his leadership and his ability to kind of bring people together and always has positive words. So he's a great leader, he's a great teammate, and everybody loves having Troy around.
Tom, because he's been around so long and he knows what to expect in this locker room and in practice, does that make it easier for him to come step right in and produce?
And he's been in, all these offensive meetings over the last however long the season's been going on. So even though he hasn't been out on the practice field, he's been really keeping up with the meetings and so forth. And I know he's really excited, and he can do a lot for us. He can play receiver. He can play DB. He contribute on special teams. He really does whatever this team needs.
Well,
Baltimore, a team that you're not really familiar with, similar to the Eagles. Can you speak a little bit about the team you're going to be facing next?
Yeah, and I think, and you're right, it's a team we haven't played in a bunch of years. And they're very experienced and very battle-tested. One of the best teams in the AFC last year. Really have our work cut out for us. It should be a fun week. It's a great defense we're facing. And led by a bunch of great players on that defense, Ed Reed and Ray Lewis and Terrell Suggs. And they can all really play Bart Scott. It's a very challenging defense to face, so... I know that hopefully we can present those same challenges to them. But on a Monday night, it's kind of what that team lives for.
Teddy was saying after Sunday's game that he anticipates more tough games like the one you guys had. It's that time of year. Do you agree with that?
I think we just you have anxiety before every game. You sit in a locker room just before you run out and really it's the unknown. You just don't know how the games are going to go, and you always hope for the best, and you try to prepare for everything. And really, however they play out, whether you win 56-10 like we did in Buffalo, or this past weekend where it came down right to the end, you have to really be mentally tough and prepare for both. And I think you always prepare for the tough ones, and if it ends up not being as close as you expected, then you deal with that too. It's a good thing to deal with. But we're always expecting that whatever the team's best performance and whatever they're capable of, really that's what we expect.
Bill raves about Ed Reed. How does he change?
He wants to adopt Ed Reed.
Yeah, he does.
Yeah, it's going to be Ed Belichick.
He does rave about him, though.
Yeah,
How does he change what you look at in terms of their defense?
Yeah, I know he coached him at the Pro Bowl last year, and I think as a defensive coach, you look at a player like that who's such a game changer, he coached Lawrence Taylor, and he knew what an impact on the game Lawrence Taylor had when he was coaching, and I think Ed Reed's a similar in different ways, but really a game changer, he's a ball hawk. He's covers so much ground back there. He's really smart. He's really aware. He loves football. He's got all the great qualities of a great defensive player. And I tell you, he better run after the game's over, because coach is going to try to bring him back on the plane with us if he could.
Personally, do you like the games that are close as opposed to the games that are really out of whack, like some of the games this year?
Yeah, we've had some games that haven't, in the fourth quarter, haven't been much of a game. This last one, I think we've shown some mental toughness in Dallas and in Indianapolis and the Eagles, where we've been down and in the second half, and you got to find ways to make plays under pressure. And I think this team's done a good job, whether we're up or down, of focusing on doing your job. And a lot of it's composure and poise and this tough environment you're playing in. Two of those games were on the road where the crowd's really into it, and we found ways to pull it out in the end. So, the goal is to win. That's what we approach every week as, and it's whether you win by 30 or you win by 3, you're trying to win the game. And everyone was happy that we won this past game. It's going to be really a challenge for us to get to 12-0.
Are you sick of all these night games?
I'm tired of them. I look around at all these tired faces today, and I think everyone's just dragging a little bit. It's just you just don't get home till late, and you're feels like you're always trying to get caught up throughout the week. So I'm glad we got the extra day. It's on a Sunday night game, so it'll be a long week this week, I'm sure, and 4 days of practice. And we can use each and every day of that to get ready for this team. And hopefully we put our best out there.
John, is it a disadvantage that you guys, because you're so pretty, you like bats, you never see the sun. You're always playing on
night. It's first I heard of that.
Yeah, is it a disadvantage to you guys because you get so many in a row, this is your third one in a row?
Yeah, it is, you play when they tell you to play, and I think most guys in the NFL, you love the Monday night games. The fun part about Monday night is, just before the game at 8 o'clock when you're ready to go out there, and the bad part is about 11:30 as soon as the game's over. So it's fun to play on Monday night, but I think most guys would love to play Sunday at 1 every single week. Man, I think that gives you the most time to let your body rest and your mind to get focused on those weeks ahead. Coaches love it because they get, you know, on the Monday night games, they get the extra day to practice you, which a lot of the older players don't like so much. But we kind of play when, you know, we play when they tell us to play. Yeah, they challenge you in a lot of ways. I think they have very athletic pass rushers, and they have a bunch of different packages that they run with different type of D linemen that have different abilities in there. Some rush the passer, some really play the run really well. They get you in long yardage situations. I think they're very creative with what they do up front, and just can't go to sleep on them. I mean, if one guy isn't focused and concentrating doing their job, then it's going to be a negative play. And they guy like Ed Reed or Ray Lewis or you know, Bart Scott or Chris McAllister, they're all looking to make interceptions. And not only that, they're trying to return for touchdowns. So they got a bunch of playmakers, and we've got to be able to focus in on every play and make sure we're really aware of what they're doing so we can really stay on track. So thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Dallas Thomas.
You have to beat the guy that's in front of you. I mean, it's not like it just depends on which way you come from or anything like that. So that's pretty much it.
I mean, it's a loss. I mean, he's one of our better players, and you know, I'm pretty sure the guys that are behind him will step up and fill his shoes. All right, that's it. All right, thank you. Yeah, I've already been asked that one.
Yeah. What was it like, Frank? I mean, Belichick loves the guy as his former teammate. What was it like with him? What
his I mean, he's one of the leaders on that defense. Stepped up. Defensive player of the year a couple of years ago. Ball hawk, covers a lot of ground. So, you know, he definitely opposes a challenge for the offense. And return punts, scored a touchdown against Cincinnati. Does a lot of great things. Ball hawk, like I said, he's a physical guy, come up and hit you, make a great presence in the run game. And so those are all the things you look for in a good safety.
And played against that offense, or played with that offense before. How much of an advantage is it in terms of knowing maybe some of their schemes and terminology and whatnot?
They got a new offensive coordinator, so, you know, I don't know. I wasn't there this year. I don't know if they changed things up when they brought in Neuhausel or what. And so they have a different bag. They have different personnel. And so some of it may be a little different. Some of it may be the same. But other than that, you know some of the guys that you've went against. And so you do know some of the guys.
Yeah, help a little bit in terms of, you know, like bowler's tendencies and whatnot.
Not necessarily. Because, again, it's not like I played against him and really paid attention to his things. And so it's kind of like, you know, you're not out there practicing against him. You're out there practicing against the opponent.
Felix, how does your role change now that Colvin's out for the season in the defense in general?
I have no idea.
Hey, do you still got some ties down there in Baltimore? Are you looking forward to getting back there just to see some
communication? Yeah. I mean, you get a chance to go back and see guys that you know or you played with. Still have friends there you talk to, you know, sparingly throughout the season and then in off season. And so it'll be nice to see some of the guys, speak to them, and shake their hands after the game and hope all is well with them. That's not. I'm not talking about that because you're gonna take it like I said before. You're gonna take half of what I say and put it on the air and make it into something that is not. And so I'm not even going down that road again. Where you been?
I'm glad I wasn't.
Crab cakes or crab biscuits?
Neither. I'm allergic to shellfish. You know, everybody loves the crab cakes there or whatever, but, you know, I mean, I hope they're good. I'll never be able to tell you, so that's one thing I want. But as far as night games, no, I'm not allergic to them. If so, I'd have hives all over. So, but no, I mean, it's part of the game. And so after this week, we get back to business as usual.
Obviously, you get fired up out there, you know, playing in this night. I mean, playing in general, but in terms of those night games, playing Monday night, having the spotlight, I mean, is that much more juices you up out there?
Yeah, I mean, you don't have to worry about energy on Monday night, Sunday night. You know, it just comes with the territory. It's a national stage, and that's how it goes. And so it won't be no different this Monday night. And then with you playing your old team, it won't be a problem for nobody. I'm not talking about the Eagles. If anybody talking about Baltimore, we're taking questions.
Sort of dissected in the media all the possibilities that could happen, and one of them is maybe you play more outside, and maybe we take that for granted in terms of that's an easy switch because it's another linebacker position. Is that an easy transition if you have to make it?
Yeah.
Pretty easy.
We should be all right. Y'all funny. That's it. Good job.
Eric Alexander.
Being outside are very, very slim. So I mean, there are some advantages, but I'm primarily inside, so it really doesn't affect what I do.
Well, I mean, in terms of having a fifth guy who can step in, even if it's stepping in inside and giving one of the starters a rest, just how necessary that is in the NFL. Am I?
You're not being too clear.
It's like basically you had Junior as your fifth guy. It sort of splits in time with Teddy, and sometimes guys that move around. The idea of having five guys before spots.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, yeah, definitely that's helpful. I mean, the more depth that you have, it always helps your defense.
And how about you? I mean, do you see yourself stepping into maybe what Junior was doing?
Well, like I said, if I'm called upon to help out, I mean, I'll help out. I've just got to make sure that I'm ready when my name is called to step in.
Is this at all similar to? Could it be similar to what you did last year in the AFC title game, where you went from being that reserve guy to then playing a more expanded role?
I don't know. Whatever Bill has in store for me, that's what'll happen. I'm not really sure. I can't really comment on that.
In terms of readiness, I guess, are there any?
Well, I'm always ready every game. I mean, I was ready the first game of the season, just like I was ready for the AFC championship game last year.
Dante Stallworth.
How nasty is that Baltimore defense? Or is they as good as they've been in the past?
Yeah, I think they are. Just from watching some film today, they got a lot of guys flying around to the ball, flying around. They can present some problems for your protection. They got some guys that's been Pro Bowlers back there in the secondary, and obviously they got the linebacker. So still a good defense. I mean, they're making plays, and it's going to be a big challenge for us this weekend.
Dante, do you guys have to run your routes any differently because the secondary is so highly skilled?
We gotta be more precise. You always try to do that anyway, regardless. But you gotta be on your P's and Q's since they are such a good secondary, and they like to do some things that can confuse the offenses. So we just gotta be on our P's and Q's, and starting today with the extra day of preparation this week that we get. We got to continue to try to get better and starting out with today's practice.
What are your impressions of Troy Brown?
Say it again.
Your impressions of Troy Brown? We haven't seen him on the field yet this year, but obviously you've seen
him. He's a smart guy. I mean, that's one thing that he brings to the table is his intelligence from this being his 99th year in the NFL. Troy's been in it. He's been, I think, four or five Super Bowls, I think. He's been in this game a long time, and he knows how to play, so... anytime you get a guy like that, you try to soak up some information from him. So, that's definitely something that he brings to the table and to our meeting rooms is some intelligence and experience.
Dante, I was told you were friends with Sean Taylor. Was that can you talk about that relationship and how you're feeling today?
Well, obviously, it's not a good situation to have anybody that's close to you pass. We have the same agent, and that's how I knew him. Pretty good guy, hell of a player, as you guys knew. It's unfortunate that happened, especially for him being so young. But he's in a better place now, and just continue to send out prayers to his family. And it's a sad deal.
Thank you.